The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to, as always, on today's program. First, a quick update on the Belfast Pack. That's coming up. That's coming up quick, just a few weeks away, I guess about a month away. We have 52 people registered for the pack in Belfast, and that's from only inviting 348. So some really solid numbers there. Edwin was telling me this morning that we just had one of our donors from Spain who has signed up for the Belfast pack. So we've got some people, just like with the London pack, who are traveling in from great distances. We've got the second invitation. It's scheduled to go out on Monday, and that will include a handful of new subscribers, as you've seen if you've been watching the videos we've produced here. We've really been trying to draw more attention to the Trumpet Magazine by telling people that if you subscribe, then you can receive one of these invitations. So with the second invitation going out on Monday, hopefully we'll get a few more to sign up for the Belfast pack. That's over the weekend of January 20th, I believe, 19th and 20th, I think are the dates there. But we'll be up in Belfast just a couple of weeks after we return from the ministerial conference in Edmond, Oklahoma. That, too, is coming up fast. That begins, I guess a week from today. So pretty amazing how fast this school year, this semester has gone by. The students are engaged in their final exams these next few days, and then they'll get a bit of a break from that. Well, investigations galore. They're just all over the place, even today at the New York Times. This is a front and center, front page story on the New York Times. Russian 2016 influence operation targeted African Americans on social media. So they're still trying to get into all of the ways that the Russians meddled in the 2016 election. This isn't the first time we've heard about this. It certainly won't be the last. And within the Times, you have to get a good ways down to read this. It says, whether such efforts had a significant effect is difficult to judge. And you know what some of this was. Just random Russians on social media, on Facebook or wherever, trying to influence people, in this case, minorities, not to go out and vote. It says, whether such efforts had a significant effect is difficult to judge. Black voter turnout declined in 2016 for the first time in 20 years in a presidential election, but it is impossible to determine whether that was the result of the Russian campaign. Well, really, we've already found out, just going back to the Director of National Intelligence report from 2017, that the Soviets, the Russians, they've been doing this for decades, going back to the USSR days. And we learned from that report last year. And this was something that was compiled based upon evidence from the NSA, from the CIA, from the FBI. All of these organizations who are now responsible for investigating Donald Trump and everyone connected to him. This report last year, it found that the Soviet Union used intelligence officers, influence agents, forgeries, and press placements to disparage candidates perceived as hostile to the Kremlin. Now, that same report says that these kinds of activities have been going on for decades. There was not one shred of evidence in that report suggesting that there was any kind of collusion. But you go back to what, and I've mentioned this before, I've used these clips before, you go back to what President Obama was saying in October when they were, like I covered with you yesterday, they were really pressing Donald Trump. Are you going to accept the results of this oncoming election? And then there were reports of Russian meddling in the summer of 2016. And Barack Obama just brushed them aside. He said, they're no big deal. It's not going to influence the election. Here's what he had to say, clip one.
There is no serious person out there who would suggest somehow that you could even rig America's elections. There's no evidence that that has happened in the past or that there are instances in which that will happen this time.
There actually is evidence that it's happened in the past. He didn't want to do anything about it. He tried to downplay it. He tried to dismiss it. He said no serious person would suggest that you could rig an election. Now the narrative has completely changed. Now you have these kinds of stories in the New York Times. I love this particular quote. This is from today's New York Times. It says, among the services the Russians have provided Mr. Trump. Among the services the Russians, in general, have provided President Trump. The nation of Russia. Providing services for Donald Trump. Among them, well, here they are. It is to join in and amplify his regular attacks on Mr. Mueller. So they're still helping him. They helped him win the election, and now they're helping him attack Bob Mueller. It says, posing as fed-up Americans, the internet research agency trolls have denounced the investigation of Russian election interference as a weird conspiracy pushed only by liberal crybabies. So the people that are criticizing the nonstop investigations, well, those are Russians too. That's all part of the game plan. Use the Russians to win the election and then use the Russians to, I guess, defend yourself against these nonstop investigations. And they're all over the place. Wired, the magazine, it had a piece yesterday or the day before pointing out the 17 known investigations aimed at Donald Trump. 17 investigations, and it points out at the beginning it's not even counting any of the congressional investigations, and we know those are about to ramp up as soon as the Democrats get the majority in January. But it lists them out. The Russian government's election attack. There's one of the investigations. Then WikiLeaks, that was part of it. Remember WikiLeaks? The summer of 2016, breaking into that DNC server, or the Russians, I guess, were behind that, and WikiLeaks, it's hard to keep track of all of these breaks, these security breaches. There have been so many of them, from Russia, China, and everywhere else. Last week, I noted the Middle Eastern influence, not just Russia. Remember, the Daily Beast reported that they're going global. What about Middle Eastern meddling? That's being investigated too. There's all the investigations surrounding Paul Manafort, not just him, but his associates. The money laundering, any and every connection to Russia, any Russian friend, you have to view that with suspicion. And then, of course, the Trump Tower Moscow project. The tower that was discussed, the potential tower, I should say, the discussion about maybe building a tower. And of course, if you know anything about Donald Trump, he builds towers all over the world. But we've got to investigate that, because if there's one in Russia, or if there might have been one in Russia, that's suspicious. Obstruction of justice. That's really what triggered the whole Mueller investigation to begin with. Jim Comey stealing the government documents, leaking them to the New York Times, saying that Donald Trump's statement to let it go with Mike Flynn, that was obstruction of justice. This Wired publication, or this article, it says recent court documents hint that Mueller might be assembling a broader obstruction of justice case against Trump, one that could potentially argue that the president's public statements intentionally misled the public in an attempt to limit the scope of the Russia investigation. So here's Wired. Of course, Wired is cheering it on, celebrating. There should be more. This is just the 17 that we know of. There's lots more, we hope. Well, we certainly hope there is. We've got to, well, we've got to even go after his children, like I covered yesterday. That's the way to get to Donald Trump. Go after his kids. That's the spirit behind this. And then there's the campaign conspiracy, all of the finances, the campaign finances. And then recently, too, we hear about the inauguration funding. That was revealed by the Wall Street Journal last week. And not just the inauguration, the Trump super PAC, the funding that is surrounding that PAC. And, of course, the connection to Ivanka. She's one of the children. We've got to go after her. She's the one that the president really likes, we heard from MSNBC. Take her down. And foreign lobbying. This article brings that out. Foreign lobbying. That's part of the inauguration funding, I suppose. One here that I'm not familiar with, I'll just quote it. Maria Butina in the NRA. It says, the guilty plea last week by Russian agent and gun rights enthusiast Butina came with an extensive cooperation agreement, including the possibility of her meeting with investigators without lawyers present. That's the way they prefer it with Republicans. You don't need lawyers. Come on, just come yourself. We're here to help you. We'll help you out. And then they're trapped, just like Mike Flynn. It says, while the most immediate next target of the investigation appears to be Butina's boyfriend, Republican operative Paul Erickson, he was sent a so-called target letter by prosecutors recently. Questions have also swirled about 2016 campaign funding by the National Rifle Association and the reach of Russia into the U.S. conservative movement. We need to broaden the scope of these investigations. We've got to take down, well, if we can take down the conservative movement, the NRA, some of these conservative bastions, let's do it. Let's go after them. Turkish influence. This was revealed by the New York Times last week. It says, according to court documents, Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn contributed to two investigations beyond the Russia probe. While both were redacted in his court case, there are strong hints, including reporting by the New York Times, that one of those two cases includes a grand jury in Northern Virginia focused on illegal influence by the Turkish government. Turkey, the Middle East, Russia. You get the idea. And notice as you go through this list, these are 17 by Wired's count. 17 investigations. Notice how closely the media are tied into this. So many of these so-called investigations, they're being investigated by the New York Times, by the Washington Post. Then there are the taxes. Well, we've got to get to Donald Trump's tax returns because we know he's been cheating there too. The Democrats already, they're rubbing their hands together. They cannot wait to get to the tax returns. This piece says, in the wake of a New York Times investigation that found Donald Trump had apparently benefited from upwards of $400 million in tax schemes, city officials said they were investigating Donald Trump's tax payments. Can you believe that? He got away with $400 million because of these tax schemes. We've got to get our hands on those taxes, those tax returns. Then there's the Trump Foundation. The article here says the New York Attorney General sued the Trump Foundation this summer, charging it with, as the New York Times summarized, sweeping violations of campaign finance laws, self-dealing, and illegal coordination with the presidential campaign. All of those years, decades as a businessman, decades building towers all over the world, and only now do we find out, because of all of these press reports, all of these evil dealings, tax cheats, campaign finance violations. Only now it's coming out into the open. Before he ever declared his candidacy, of course, he was quite popular with the socialites in Manhattan. He was quite popular with the Hollywood celebrities. He was quite popular with the news media. this last one here, the emoluments clause. It says that the attorneys general for Maryland and D.C. sent out subpoenas earlier this month for Trump Organization and hotel financial records relating to their lawsuit alleging that the president is in breach of the so-called emoluments clause of the Constitution. So he's also violating the Constitution. He's receiving all of these benefits from all of these foreign nations because they stay in his hotels. They're following through. They're following through on what they said. The day that Hillary lost the election, we are going to do everything we can to take him down, to destroy him. Over the summer, Dinesh D'Souza had this movie. What's the name of it? Death of a Nation. He put together this short little montage. Coming from your friends in the media, the friends of America. Here's what they said, clip six.
Is there a doomsday plan?
We're gonna go after him in every conceivable way.
A Trump presidency is unthinkable and dangerous and damaging, so basically anything we do to stop that is perfectly fine, whether it's ethical or not, whether it's legal or not, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Anything we can do. Doesn't matter if it's unethical. Doesn't matter if it's illegal. We've got to take him down. So says the radical left. They were saying these things early on, right after the election. You saw how downcast so many of them were. And so they've been following through. 17 investigations. Can you believe it? Another one here from that Wired piece. It says, as journalists, this is regarding campaign and transition contacts with Russia. That's being investigated too. The contacts with Russia. We know there's something there. There's no shred of evidence pointing to collusion, but they keep coming back to it. It's in the front page of the New York Times today. Here's how Russia helps Donald Trump, and they're continuing to help him. This one here says, as journalists have pieced together, at least 14 Trump associates had contact with Russia during the campaign and transition from foreign policy aide Carter Page to would-be Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The journalists, you see, the journalists have pieced this together because they love America, because they've accepted the results of the election, because they're just trying to help you get to the facts. They're just trying to spread the truth. The journalists, it says, the journalists have put all of this together. There are people who know Donald Trump that also happen to know a Russian. That passes for investigative reporting today. These are the kinds of stories that investigators, actual prosecutors, pick up and say, well, yeah, we need to look into this. Greg Miller, he writes at the Washington Post. He made some comments 2 or 3 days ago about the infamous Steele dossier, this document with all of the salacious and unverified accusations. That's even the way Jim Comey described it. He was asked about this dossier, as I say, a few days ago. And listen to what he has to say here. This is clip three.
I think that overall, like in its broadest, its most accurate in its broadest, most sweeping assertions and conclusions. It's the narrower you get and the more particular you get, the harder it is to figure out whether it's on the mark.
So what it's saying overall, that Russia helped President Trump, and that's right on the mark. That's true. He was right about that. But now when you get into the details, all of the actual facts, that's where it's kind of harder to establish whether it's true or not. In other words, it's fake but accurate. He did get help from the Russians. We just know it. We know there was collusion there. We can't prove it. We don't have any evidence. But he got it. Steele got it right overall. I mean, the big principle, he's spot on. It's just when you get into the weeds a little bit that we can't seem to verify anything. and he gives some examples. Helpfully, I mean, this is actually helpful. Listen to what he said, clip four.
The thing that people, I think, remember the most vividly about the dossier is, you know, the idea that there's a tape somewhere, some compromise of Trump consorting with prostitutes at the Ritz-Carlton in Moscow. I mean, could be. I mean, given what we know about Trump, it certainly wouldn't be outside the realm of the possible that this happened, but we've seen no evidence. And it's not for lack of trying.
It could be. We certainly think it could be possible, but we've seen no evidence. And it's not for a lack of trying. They have turned over every stone to try to prove this, to try to prove that the dossier and all of this salacious accusation and slander, to try to prove that it's true. And look, it's still possible that he did these things. We just can't prove it. We just can't find the evidence. That's the Jim Comey strategy. He was the head of the FBI. How many times has he said, I don't know, but it's possible? That's the FBI director, the former FBI director. Listen to what Greg Miller, he gave another example here. This is just a couple of days ago on C-SPAN, clip five.
I mean, there's other material in the dossier. We literally spent weeks and months trying to run down. There's an assertion in there that Michael Cohen, Trump's lawyer, went to Prague to settle payments that were needed at the end of the campaign. We sent reporters through every hotel in Prague, through all over the place, trying to figure out if he was ever there, and came away empty.
They came away empty. That was an important little tidbit in the dossier, because Michael Cohen supposedly was in Prague during the campaign, during 2016. And he was there to pay off the Russian-linked hackers. This is the smoking gun. And so they sent reporters, just one newspaper. This is the Washington Post. They literally spent weeks and months sending reporters to, his words, not mine, every hotel in Prague. Every hotel. They went through every hotel in Prague just to try to find out if Michael Cohen was ever there. And they came away empty. Just think about this for a moment. This is the major media. This is the most influential paper in the United States, or at least, if not, second to the New York Times. Devoting all of these resources, spending months to try to find out, to try to prove that Michael Cohen was, in fact, in Prague. Never mind what he said. Well, you know, there was a time they couldn't trust anything that Michael Cohen said. Now everything's spot on. Now they agree with every word. Everything he's saying is the truth. But back when he said, I didn't go to Prague, I've never even been there. No, he was lying. And we've got to send an army of reporters there to prove it. He was in Prague. He was paying off Russian hackers. He said it, like I said. They spent months. They sent reporters through every hotel in Prague to try to figure this out. Look at their determination. Not to spread the truth. When they came back, that army of reporters, did they report, was this headline news at the Washington Post? There is no truth. There is no truth to that charge. Michael Cohen never went to Prague. I mean, you hear a little bit about it here and there. Lanny Davis, his representative at one time, he hasn't been to Prague. Michael Cohen himself said it. But think about if these news organizations put this kind of energy and intensity into actual truth, instead of in trying to destroy Donald Trump, think about what we could know. Think about what we would know about what's happening in Europe right now. But it's all motivated by the political bias. We, 8, 9, 10 years ago, it was all that we could do to just try to find out precious few details about Barack Obama's pastor from 20 years of his life, making all of these anti-American statements, all of this hatred for Jews. We couldn't find out one bit. In this case, they sent, it's not for lack of trying, they sent an army of reporters through every hotel in Prague. Fox News yesterday, it reported this: the salacious and unverified opposition research dossier cited by the FBI as its main justification to surveil a top Trump aide contains many claims that are likely false, according to the Yahoo News reporter who was among the first to break the news of the dossier's existence. This is Michael Isikoff, the Yahoo News reporter. He was one of the first ones to break the news. This was breaking news in 2016. Hey, this dossier, it's really got some juicy gossip. He comes out, first you heard from the Washington Post reporter, Greg Miller, Glenn Miller's the musician from way back when. Greg Miller, who comes out and says, it's generally speaking, it was on target, but all the details are off. We came up empty with that. And here's Michael Isikoff saying that these claims in that dossier are likely false. Listen, Fox News, of course, is the one that has to report these things. Jim Comey was on Capitol Hill yesterday testifying yet again, stonewalling most likely, and he comes out and listen to the first thing that he says to the reporters. Here's clip 7.
So another day of Hillary Clinton's emails and the Steele dossier. This, while the President of the United States is lying about the FBI, attacking the FBI, and attacking the rule of law in this country, how does that make any sense at all? Republicans used to understand that the actions of a president matter, the words of a president matter, the rule of law matters, and the truth matters. Where are those Republicans today? At some point, someone has to stand up, and in the face of fear of Fox News, fear of their base, fear of mean tweets, stand up for the values of this country and not slink away into retirement, but stand up and speak the truth.
So he's complaining there about getting into details about Hillary Clinton's emails, the fact that he fixed it for her, her exoneration, and then the Steele dossier, which we're finding out this week, even from the left-wing reporters. We're finding out just how untrue it was from the very beginning. Lies, nothing but lies. And then he lashes out at Republicans and Fox News. Fox News, the one that reported yesterday that the reporter who broke the news of the Steele dossier used to surveil Donald Trump. The claims in it are largely false, Fox reported. So I guess what we would ask Mr. Comey is, where would we hear about this? At least with any kind of enthusiasm. Look, this is the truth about that dossier. Why is this important? Well, just like my father wrote in April of this year, he wrote, this was the Nunez memo. It says, according to the Nunez memo, former FBI director Andrew McCabe, who resigned just 4 days before the Nunez memo was released, admitted that there would be no Russia investigation if not for this dossier. So you have all of these investigations triggered by the dossier. And then these reporters now, 2 years after the fact, saying, yeah, the details and the evidence, there's just nothing there. We tried. I mean, we tried really hard. We sent reporters all over the place. But we never could verify. We never could prove it. We never could secure the evidence. And so we find out then that this is just all a bogus, politically motivated report, and Christopher Steele really has admitted as much. And yet that's not breaking news with the major media. They don't care. They'll keep moving on for other potential progs. That's the strategy. They said it from the beginning. Look, we're going to do everything that we can, whether it's ethical or not, whether it's lawful or not. We've got to take him down. We have to destroy him. It says, this is my father, Steele's uncorroborated dossier allowed Robert Mueller, the special counsel for Justice Department, to commence the Russia investigation. That's what got the whole ball rolling. You get the Steele dossier, throw in a little bit of Mike Flynn. Comey gets fired, and it's the perfect arrangement for Robert Mueller to be appointed. And then we're really off and running. One investigation, two investigations, three, four. Now we're up to 17. No Russian collusion. The Steele dossier is bogus. It's false, full of lies. But 17 investigations. Rowan Scarborough, writing at the Washington Times, he gives more background to the dossier and Christopher Steele. He says here again, this is the little, tiny Washington Times, read by maybe the Republicans in Congress, and that's about it. Certainly not the Washington Post or the New York Times. Here's the little Washington Times saying British ex-spy Christopher Steele, who wrote the Democrat-financed anti-Trump dossier, said in a court case that he was hired by a Democratic law firm in preparation for Hillary Clinton challenging the results of the 2016 presidential election. You see, Chris Wallace, when he was asking Donald Trump in that debate, will you accept the results of the election? Hillary said she was horrified by President Trump's response. In fact, we now know that Chris Wallace should have asked Hillary Clinton, if you lose to this man, will you accept it? Because she was already making preparations. Now, she thought it was far-fetched, the idea of Trump actually winning, but they had plans in motion already, just in case. It's the insurance plan, as Peter Strzok put it, with his friend Lisa Page. And here's Christopher Steele. He's the dossier's author. He admits, yeah, I was hired by the Clinton people in order to challenge the results, to prepare to challenge the results. It says he said the law firm, Perkins Coie, wanted to be in a position to contest the results based on evidence he unearthed on the Trump campaign conspiring with Moscow on election interference. Evidence that he unearthed. He's the dossier author. And so they were working with him all the more to prepare to challenge the results of the 2016 election. And he's the perfect man for that. The perfect man. Because as he told a senior Justice Department official, he was desperate that Donald Trump not get elected and was passionate about him not being president. So it's the perfect man. He has the dossier experience, all lies, but never mind that. He's got the dossier background, and he was desperate. And here you have to listen to Comey yesterday come out of his hearing, saying, well, here we go again. More questions about the emails and the dossier. As if Donald Trump, Fox News, and Republicans are the problem. It says further on in this Washington Times piece, his scenario is contained in a sealed August 2nd declaration in a defamation lawsuit brought by three Russian bankers in London. The trio's American attorneys filed his answers Tuesday in a libel lawsuit in Washington against the investigative firm Fusion GPS. These were all the players working in cahoots with Hillary Clinton's campaign and the Democratic National Committee. It says, in an answer to interrogatories, Mr. Steele wrote, Fusion's immediate client was law firm Perkins Coie. It engaged Fusion to obtain information necessary for Perkins Coie LLP to provide legal advice on the potential impact of Russian involvement on the legal validity of the outcome of the 2016 U.S. presidential election. Now, you've heard Barack Obama saying it's not going to impact the election at all. I mean, you'd have to be a fool to believe that. So here they were preparing to contest the election on this bogus claim that the Trump people were colluding with the Russians. This piece at Washington Times says, based on that advice, parties such as the Democratic National Committee and HFACC Inc., also known as Hillary for America, could consider steps they would be legally entitled to take to challenge the validity of the outcome of that election. So they were planning in advance what to do in case they lost, just in case. They needed an insurance policy, and it looks like they were preparing quite a few of them. Well, you know some of the history with the dossier. What's pretty amazing about all this is he's slandered all of these people, and several of them are coming forward and firing back. This article says Mr. Steele faces a second defamation suit in London, this one from Russian entrepreneur Alexei Gubarev, owner of XBT Holdings and provider of computer servers to thousands of clients. In his final December 2016 dossier, this is all from the dossier. The dossier is fueling these defamation cases. It says Mr. Steele accused Mr. Gubarev of actually performing the hacking on Democratic computers under duress from Russian intelligence. He said in a court filing that the allegation came from unsolicited call-ins. So, I got a call that said that this Russian guy did it, so I went ahead and put it in the dossier. Well, here comes the Russian now saying, I'm going to sue you. There's no truth to that. It says here, Mr. Gubarev said the allegations are made up. In Florida, he's also suing BuzzFeed, the news website that published the entire dossier in January 2017. And so here they were putting together this document that they really felt like would probably never see the light of day, because it wouldn't need to. We just have to slander him, President Trump, that is, or Donald Trump, and then as long as we win the election, then this can all go away. No one would ever know about all this. The spying, the FISA court applications, the warrants. Well, now it's all coming to light. And you had Devin Nunes back in February coming out with his memo exposing the dossier for the fraud that it was. And how was he treated in the media? How did the Washington Post feel about that? The Democrats there, remember, they were fighting. They were fighting to keep that memo under wraps. We don't want this out there. And Mr. Nunes, he should win some kind of an award for staying with it, for staying with the truth. Now you have all of these revelations. Even Christopher Steele himself, if you go back to last year, again, when he has to defend himself in court or in a defamation case, well, he very quickly begins to backpedal. Well, that was an unsolicited call. I couldn't completely verify that. This is from a story, once again, at the Washington Times. This is from last year. Christopher Steele, it says, the former British spy who wrote the infamous anti-Donald Trump dossier, acknowledges that a sensational charge his sources made about a tech company CEO and Democratic Party hacking is unverified. I do acknowledge it's not true. I didn't verify that. I went ahead and put it in the dossier, but it wasn't verified. It says, in a court filing, Mr. Steele also said his accusations against the president and his aides about a supposed Russian hacking conspiracy were never supposed to be made public, much less posted in full on a website for the whole world to see on January the 10th. Well, I wanted it to trickle out so that we could destroy him. That's what he's saying. I wasn't expecting the whole thing to be published. It's not my fault that BuzzFeed did this. Well, look at the spirit behind all of this. Met my father in that Nunez piece, by the way. Go back and I think I referred to that yesterday, the Nunez piece. That's April of 2018. He talks about Revelation 12 and verse 12 and how wrathful the devil is. because he knows his time is so short. And he said that that memo released by the House, the Nunez memo, is evidence of just how active the devil is. That's what we're seeing in these revelations. You piece all of this together and you see the handiwork of the God of this world, Satan the devil. You see his devices. He refers you back to a section of America Under Attack where he talked about how reporters treated Barack Obama. Remember, they would swoon with him. With Donald Trump, it's 17 investigations. But they would swoon. They would swoon with Barack Obama. And my father wrote in the April article, this is not normal conduct for professional journalists. What is wrong with our media? This is aberrant behavior, to say the least. What causes that, he says. The way these people are being swayed and driven by their emotions is a strong sign of the devil's influence. That's what we're seeing here. In every direction, signs everywhere of the devil's influence. 17 investigations, Wired proudly reports. Doesn't that, even to a Democrat, you would think, doesn't that seem a little ridiculous? 17? We're so far beyond Russian collusion. It's everything, every stone. They're going at each investigation just like the Washington Post went after the Prague story, the Prague connection. They are not going to stop trying. The goal here, as they themselves have said, the goal here is to destroy a presidency. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes. And if he got the most votes, then it would be my expectation of Hillary Clinton to offer a gracious concession speech and pledge to work with him in order to make sure that the American people benefit from an effective government. And it would be my job to welcome Mr. Trump, regardless of what he said about me or my differences with him on my opinions, and escort him over to the Capitol, in which there would be a peaceful transfer of power. That's what Americans do.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England. This is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
He was the one who said most often and with most emphasis that we must be a nation of laws and not of men.
That's historian David McCullough commenting on John Adams, the second president of the United States. We last week we finished our book club for the semester, and finished that book, some of us, some didn't. And together with it, we watched this seven-part series, I think it was put out by HBO many years ago, on John Adams, and it's based upon McCullough's book. And of course, as you're reading the book, you can't help but to notice the bits and pieces in that video series that they get off or that they get wrong. But to their credit, I mean, they're trying to put together a story as well, and it is a little bit of a mishmash here and there. But for the most part, the video series together with the book, it proved to be quite an inspiring study into the life of one of America's greatest presidents. It was John Adams, as McCullough brought out there in that brief clip. It was Adams who emphasized that we have to be a nation of laws and not of men. There has to be a rule of law that applies to everyone. The founders, they drew it up, the founding documents. It's a republic. It's not a democracy, a pure democracy. This is a republic based upon constitutional law. Adams, early on in that series, and early on in the book, because this was before the Revolution, he defended those British soldiers in the so-called British or Boston Massacre, where they were shot, or five Americans, I guess, were shot and killed by these British soldiers. But as Adams proved in a court of law, these soldiers were provoked. And so here is a young John Adams, a devout patriot and Christian. He was American through and through. The whole city of Boston wanted to see these soldiers hung. They wanted justice. This was unjust for those soldiers to kill those Americans. Well, Adams defended them, the soldiers, and ended up winning the case because they were provoked. They were throwing objects, pieces of ice, rocks, whatever, at these soldiers. And the soldiers acted in self-defense. Adams said, "It's better that many guilty persons escape unpunished than one innocent person should be punished." Think about that statement. He's a lawyer, or was a lawyer. He was a lawyer in early America. And he said, "It's better to have guilty persons escape than for one innocent person to be punished." Why? He says the reason is because it's of more importance to community that innocence should be protected than it is that guilt should be punished. Innocence, well, in an ideal setting, it should be both. The guilty should be punished, and innocence should be protected. But he said of the two, it's more important to protect those who are innocent. You look at what's going on right now, as I covered in the first segment. 17 investigations. And like in the case of Mike Flynn, those FBI agents, they knew what he said. They knew what he said to Kislyak. They had the transcripts of the phone conversations. In other words, they knew the truth. And they didn't go to the White House on January 24th, 2017. They didn't go to the White House interested in protecting Mike Flynn's innocence because he hadn't done anything. What he did was perfectly legal. They went to the White House to try to trap him in a crime, a process crime, a crime that if he did lie, which a lot of people say that he did, it was because of what the FBI arranged. It's because of what McCabe and Comey and Strzok. It's because of what they planned and calculated. It was a setup. And now all these other investigations, And people, many of them who are either innocent or if they are guilty of crimes, they're crimes that are totally unrelated and that the government seemed totally uninterested in going after. Years ago, Paul Manafort, for example. But now, all of a sudden, you've got to go after him. You, as Mayor Giuliani said just recently, you've got to do it if they've pulled a tag off of a mattress. Because the goal, the objective, is to bring down the president. Adams in that court proceedings with those British soldiers, he famously said, "Facts are stubborn things, and whatever may be our wishes, our inclinations, or the dictums of our passions, they cannot alter the state of facts and evidence." So he defended those soldiers, even though his heart told him, don't do it, don't do it. They deserve to be hanged. He defended them because they were innocent. And the innocent, whether they were Americans or Britons, the innocent needed to be protected. He defended them because of the truth. Judge Justice Brandeis, I forget the era that he ruled in, or was, I assume that's a justice on the Supreme Court, but I saw this quote the other day where he said, if the government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. It invites anarchy. That's what happens when the government breaks the law. When the government, when the investigators, when the FBI and the DOJ, when they don't hold themselves to the same standards that they hold Mike Flynn or Donald Trump or whoever else, Ivanka Trump. And so what we're seeing is this contempt for law, this contempt for truth. We're inviting anarchy. If there's one thing that the Russians wanted to accomplish by meddling in 2016, just like they would have wanted in 2012 or 2008 or 2004 or 1988 or 1976, if there's one thing that they wanted to accomplish by meddling in the U.S. election, it was to sow discord in the United States of America. It was to cause division in the United States of America. And on this, they have been spectacularly successful, thanks in large part to the radical left, which instead of rising up and saying, hey, we're not going to let an enemy nation split us apart. We're not going to let a foreign nation, and it's Russian hackers, or it's Facebook users, to stir up this kind of animosity and hatred, this kind of sickness and disease from within. But that's exactly what's happening. It's exactly what's happening. They're using the Russian meddling not to go after Russia, not to retaliate against Russians, but to go after Donald Trump. That's their real enemy. Think about that Brandeis quote. If the government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. It invites anarchy. That's what we're inviting. Now, there is some positives to take away from this as well. And we've noted this before. It was an interview Donald Trump gave a few months ago where he said, in talking about what would be his legacy, it was exposing this evil from within. He felt like that would be at the top of the list. That's a pretty amazing insight coming from the president. None of this, like my father pointed out in the Nunez piece, in the Saving America piece the following month, none of this would have come to light were it not for the Jeroboam administration. And, of course, projecting on further ahead, There are positives down the road with the return of Jesus Christ, but the suffering, the division, the sickness from within, the attack from without, all of that's in the very near future. And like my father brought out in that Nunez piece, Revelation 12 and verse 12, the devil knows his time is short. He knows he doesn't have much time left. And so you see his fingerprints everywhere. You see him. He's responsible for all of this. He's motivating all of this irrational behavior to bring down Manasseh, to bring down the greatest superpower this world has ever known. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.